Session number 787.
Brigadier Bright, Reel 3. Before we leave this training period, just one general question I wanted to ask. I'm still slightly confused listening to your description of the sort of training program you were given, particularly when we discussed the gunnery course. I'm still rather confused as to whether the tank corps at that time really was clear about what its role was.
Yes, I think it was. I think it considered that it was the new mobile arm which had come into being at the end of the First World War, and it yet perhaps had to prove itself in the next war, which we all realized would come within our service, though we didn't know exactly when. The tactics of tank fighting were largely experimental, and I think it was realized they were experimental because it was a new arm of the service. But it was certainly believed that it was an arm of the service which might prove decisive in the next war. We certainly believed that.
Well, you were posted to 5th Battalion RTC in 1934.
Yes.
At Perham Down. Well, what were your first impressions of Perham Down when you went there?
Again, it was a hutted camp. It had earth latrines, even for the officers, and it was very primitive. In fact, the camp had been built during the 1418 war and had never really been significantly improved since then. We had tank hangars, which were fairly adequate, built out of corrugated iron, and we also had a tank workshop in which we did all the first line repairs and many of the second line repairs, which now are carried out by REME in their own workshops.
I see. Leading personalities of the 5th Battalion, anyone who made a particular impression?
Well,
on you?
The commanding officer was Lieutenant Colonel Tilley, known in those days as Justice Tilley because he was a very upright man of fairly forthright views, and he was very greatly respected in the battalion. He, I would say, was the predominant personality in the battalion, although you didn't see a great deal of the commanding officer in those days because largely the training was done by the second-in-command.
Did you nonetheless feel the Tilley style of rule, if you like?
Oh, yes, certainly. I think that all regiments, and the tank corps is no exception with its battalions, very much reflect the personality of their commanding officer. If you have a good commanding officer, you have a good battalion or regiment, and if you have a bad commanding officer, you have a bad one. Mm. And I would say, definitely, in those days, we were a good battalion, although I may be a bit biased, having been in it. Mm.
How did 5th Battalion reflect the Tilley personality? How did it come over?
Well, he was very, very keen on the mechanical efficiency of the battalion and that we should, if possible, during manoeuvres, have more tanks on the road than any other battalion in the brigade, because he regarded that as a measure of the efficiency of his battalion, and I think he was right. Otherwise, apart from saying he was a strong character, he was fairly strict in running his battalion, and I think he trained us well. There's not much else I can say about him.
And you initially joined 5th Battalion as a section officer. What were your duties in that role, all of them?
Much as would be a platoon officer in the infantry. That is to say, I had a section of tanks, which consisted of five, I think, and I was responsible, of course, for the tanks and the general discipline of the soldiers under my command, which would be very equivalent to being a platoon officer in the infantry.
This was your first experience of such a position, in fact.
Oh, yes.
How did you react to it?
Oh, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it very much. On the other hand, of course, there are limitations when you are only commanding a very small subunit. You can't use a great deal of initiative. as commanding your own small subunit. On the other hand, again, one way in which I think Colonel Tilley was good was that he encouraged his young officers in that when we went out on training, he used to select at random the various subalterns and give them jobs such as harbouring the battalion at night, that is to say, working out where all the tanks were to be positioned during the night and where they were to be hidden and so on. And he used to allocate this to us subalterns, and we became the, I think it was the harbour officer we used to be called, and then we had to go out in a light vehicle and map out where the battalion was to go. In that respect, I think Tilley was good. I think he trusted his young officers, because after all, we were often with the brigade, and if the subaltern responsible for harbouring the battalion made a mess of it, it would probably be apparent to the rest of the battalions in the brigade. So that he did trust his young officers, and I think he was good in that respect. Mm.
What would have been the routine of a typical day for a section at Perham Down at this time?
Well, in the individual training season, that is to say, up to the time we went to Till's Head and concentrated the brigade, it would be section and company training. That is to say, you would take your section out on its own and drive over the countryside, practicing formations, changing from one formation to another, thinking up imaginary situations. There's an enemy over the next hill, and how do you deploy your tanks to get them under cover? Or how do you approach the hill when the enemy are just on the top, and so on. Then, from then, you would go to the next stage, which is when the company goes out and the company commander commands a company and he tells his sections where to go, and you would, as a section commander, would merely have responsible for disposing your own section under the direction of the company commander where he was to go. And then when we got to Till's Head, where we concentrated brigade, we used to do battalion training, that is to say, we went out as a battalion with the battalion commander in his tank, and he disposed his companies and the companies disposed their sections and so on in imaginary mock battles, sometimes against another battalion in the brigade on the other side. And then ultimately we finished up with brigade training when we all moved as a brigade, and we used to go quite long distances for the tanks of those days. I mean, we would go, say, perhaps to as far as Cirencester from Till's Head and so on schemes which were thought up as war games, perhaps at the divisional level, and the tank brigade was doing its particular task of breaking through the enemy and or exploiting success or whatever it might be.
In this period as a section officer, did you find, despite your very good training, that there were still, in fact, skills that you hadn't acquired and were acquiring in this role?
As regards man management, certainly, because mechanically I would say that we had been taught as much at the D&M school as we could more or less learn about our vehicles mechanically, but man management, certainly. And in the winter, in the so-called individual training season, then you were responsible for seeing that your drivers received adequate training, that the right drivers went in for their driver mechanics exam, and which there was a course run within the battalion for them to learn, the drivers to learn to be driver mechanics and so on. You were responsible for seeing that your section was properly organised and properly trained as regards individual men during the winter, and then when the spring came, you took them out as a section, and so it went on up to company, battalion and brigade training.
Now, having joined a battalion, did you find on your early experiences that the tank corps was a particularly intellectual corps, in the sense that they were discussing ideas, that they would talk in the mess, particularly about the new arm, its development, its future use and things like that? Did that kind of thing go on much?
Not to any great degree, because, of course, one of the rules in the army to which we subscribed was that you didn't talk shop in the mess, that you had discussions in your rooms and that sort of thing, which we did, and we had to write do a study and write an essay every winter, and you would discuss that with your fellow officers and so on. But I would say, in general, we behaved like young officers in any other arm. That is to say, we had a professional interest, certainly in our corps, its progress and development, but this was kept under control in and was not aired outside or probably in the mess very much.
Mm. I think at this stage it's probably difficult for you to say what people had the greatest influence, the theoreticians in this field. I think it's difficult because people like Littlehart, for example, have written so much and
yes.
propagandized. But I wonder if you can remember, casting your mind back to this particular point in time, which individuals were the biggest influence on your ideas?
Well, without any doubt at all, Brigadier Hubbard, who commanded the brigade. And you must remember we were concentrated on Salisbury Plain for 3 months from the beginning of June until the end of July, August, 4 months, beginning of June till the end of September. And Brigadier Hubbard used to summon the whole brigade, and he used to sit us down on the grass and talk to us all, and not only the officers, who we did talk to at other times, but also the whole brigade, and tell us exactly what we were going to do in our training and why we were doing it. I should say, without any doubt, he had the overwhelming interest, the overwhelming influence on the thinking of the whole tank brigade in those days, without any doubt. Mm.
Reading the writings about the development of ideas in particular, it's sometimes difficult to be certain whether Hubbard was pulling the strings on Littlehart or Littlehart was pulling the strings on Hubbard. Did you get any insight into this particular question?
I should have said that Hubbard pulled the strings and Littlehart interpreted them. I'm not going to say that Littlehart didn't develop them. I think he probably did. But I'm quite sure that the driving force behind the doctrine came from Hubbard.
Mm. So Littlehart, as a journalist, was kind of useful and could say things that Hubbard, as a professional soldier, wasn't really in a position to.
I should say certainly. Mm. And he could also spend time in developing the ideas, whereas Hubbard, after all, was a very busy man, having to also run the housekeeping of the tank corps, if you like, and make sure that we got our fair allocation of money and all the rest of it. Whereas, after all, Littlehart could spend his time thinking in his study, if he liked.
Yes.
And I think, undoubtedly, he developed a lot of Hubbard's ideas.
During this period with 5th Battalion, did you have much contact with the other arms of the service?
No. We were practically entirely on our own. We trained as a tank independent formation, and we had practically no contact with any other arms at that time. The last summer that I was training with them, which would have been 1936, after we'd done our brigade training on Tilley's Head as an isolated tank brigade, we were then given another role, and we did about a month's training and some manoeuvres with the infantry, in which we were completely changed in role, and we were made into what was then known as I tanks, or infantry tanks. That is to say, we were in support of the infantry. And when we did this role, we actually reorganised our battalions, because, you see, to support the infantry, the then idea was that you required medium or heavy tanks, really, as close artillery and machine gun support to the infantry. So there was little place, really, for the light tank there, except as a reconnaissance vehicle. So that we reorganized our battalions when we did this training, so that the heavy tanks, or the mediums, as they were in those days, the Vickers mediums, supported the infantry, and the light tanks were pretty well detached in a reconnaissance or general duty role. They were not. The close support of the infantry was given by the medium tanks. Mm. But we did this, I don't know how long, whether they did it again after that, but we certainly did it at the end of the training season in 1936, but it was after we'd done our own brigade training as an integral brigade, which was very much separate from other arms.
So little contact with other arms at the professional level. What about at the social level?
Well, not perhaps as much as we might have had in the 5th Battalion, as if we'd been right in the garrison. You see, Perham Down was about a mile outside Tidworth. And the very fact that we weren't right in Tidworth did make a certain difference. We had ordinary social contacts, the officers' club in Tidworth and that sort of thing. We were a little detached from the garrison in Tidworth, which consisted of both cavalry and infantry, because we weren't in barracks in Tidworth. We were about a mile outside. It sounds silly that a mile should make that difference, but it did. And of course, in those days, although most of the officers had beaten up old subaltern's motor cars, the troops didn't generally have motor cars, and that mile made a bit of difference.
To the extent that you did have social contact with the other arms, was there any rivalry between the tank corps and the others? And was it friendly or was it serious?
Oh, I would say it was all friendly. To some extent, I think the army before the war kept themselves to themselves. I mean, there was perhaps a slight differential in social life, say, between the cavalry and the infantry, between the infantry and ourselves, between the guards and the rest of the army. Slightly different. I mean, we mixed perfectly happily, but on the other hand, partially, I think it was a question of money, that the social life that some arms of the service lived was perhaps a bit more expensive and required rather more private means and perhaps was available to some of the other arms. But within that limit, we mixed perfectly well.
Reading the books that analyse this particular period, it sort of strikes me that the mid-30s, in a way, was a bad time for the RTC, in the sense that the momentum of the late 20s had sort of waned, the excitement over the setting up of the experimental mechanised force and so on, and you weren't quite close enough to the stimulus of the Second World War, which had such a dramatic effect on the tank corps and on its development. The early mid 30s strike me as a period of sort of doldrums in a way for the
corps.
Well,
I would put it another way. I think you're quite right that it was not a time of rapid development, but I think it was a time of consolidation. I think it was a time when the tank corps reached a very high pitch of training, I would say, although the development of ideas may have slowed down a bit, pending the stimulation of the next war, and also, of course, the fact that we were working with old equipment, as we've said, that the medium tanks Vickers, when they came out in the early 20s, were marvellous. By the middle 30s, they were getting pretty old hat. And I think that is so. But I would say that the standard of training and enthusiasm within the corps was still there. But probably the germination of new ideas was somewhat static. And also the equipment was static.
Yes. And there was also, of course, this bias in the highest army circle towards mechanizing the cavalry rather than expanding the tank corps. And I wonder whether, with these kind of things going on, whether in fact it reached young officers like yourself and what kind of impression it created you as regards the prospects of the tank corps and the prospects of its continued independence, factors like that.
I don't think we had any doubt of its continued independence. I don't think we ever thought the cavalry would take over our role entirely. I don't think we minded the cavalry becoming mechanised. We thought it was inevitable because the horse was dying out, obviously. I think it was unfortunate that General Hubbard had an inbuilt dislike of the cavalry. I think that probably did us quite a lot of harm. I think that General Hubbard did a tremendous amount for the Royal Tank Corps. Nobody has done more, but we all have our weaknesses, and I think General Hubbard's weakness was an inherent dislike and distrust of the cavalry, which took quite a long time to live down.
This seems to have been almost characteristic of many of the most senior officers in the Corps during this period. I mean, Fuller, for example, was also a pretty abrasive character, or could be, and some of the other of the more senior officers in the corps. I don't know whether it was sort of a defensive reaction to threats from outside. Perhaps it was.
Yes, but I think it was a pity, and I think it was unnecessary. I think most of us realised that the tank corps would survive, as indeed it has. I would say that ill feeling or mistrust was at the top rather than lower down.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were still using, as a section commander with 5th Battalion, you were still using Vickers mediums, and we've talked about those and what you thought of them. But you were working also with light tanks, I believe.
Yes, well now, when I joined the 5th Battalion, we still had Carden Lloyd machine gun carriers. Those were the very ancient machine gun carriers, the forerunners of the modern machine gun carrier, but they had Model T Ford engines in them, and they were very, very Heath Robinson sort of vehicles. But as they had tracks, we used them for training purposes as light tanks. I think it was perfectly obvious to anybody that you couldn't possibly fight with them, but as they had tracks, they did for training. Then when we handed those over again to train the cavalry who were becoming mechanized, for one season, we had nothing but two-wheel drive guide trucks, which we had flags on and pretended were light tanks, until the Vickers Mark II light tank came along, and then by the time I left the 5th Battalion, our light sections were entirely equipped with Vickers Mark II and Mark III light tanks, the light sections. We still had the old Vickers medium tanks in the medium section.
What was the reaction within the battalion to the Vickers light Mark II when it arrived?
Oh, we thought they were marvellous, because they were a tremendous improvement on the Carden Lloyd. For one thing, they were tanks, and the Carden Lloyd wasn't. Secondly, they were far more mechanically reliable, although by modern standards you wouldn't call them all that reliable. They were far more reliable than the Carden Lloyd. They were much more comfortable, and they could go much faster. One of the difficulties when training with the Carden Lloyd was that light tanks are supposed to go ahead as reconnaissance, as a spearhead of any advance, and the Carden Lloyd couldn't go as fast as the medium tank, so that was the medium tanks used to have to more or less stop or go very slowly to give the Carden Lloyds a chance to get ahead, whereas the Vickers light tank would go up to 25, 30 miles an hour, whereas the medium tank probably went 13 miles an hour, 15 miles an hour flat out. Mm. So that this really put the thing in context for the first time. For the first time you had a light tank which would really get ahead and do its reconnaissance work, while the medium tanks, the prototype for the modern heavy tank, was plodding along at the back. Whereas prior to that, they had to wait on the Carden Lloyds all the time.
Given that you had these machines, and for better or for worse, you were stuck with them, what about their accessories? Was there any parts of your equipment, ancillary equipment as it were, which you felt weren't what you needed, and were there in fact omissions that you were alive to at this time?
Well, I don't think we knew anything better than there was, really. The original wireless sets we first had in the Vickers mediums were extremely Heath Robinson and very unreliable. And
what sort of things would go wrong?
Oh, valves would grow and connections would break. And they were very old designed valve sets. And their reception wasn't good, and so the result was that they were very unreliable, and as long as we had them in the early days, we still used to use our flags for signaling formations. But latterly, when we got the 19 set, that was a tremendous advance, because that was a modern wireless set, whereas the previous ones were a sort of hook-up of the early days. But the 19 set was a tremendous advance, and I think we got those into, or something very similar, if it wasn't the 19 set, in the Mark II light tanks. They appeared with a good wireless set appeared about the time we got the light tanks. That made a tremendous difference. Mm.
What kind of difference? What kind of things, once when they arrived, could you do which before had not been possible?
You could communicate readily with all the other tanks in your section, whereas otherwise you were never quite sure whether they heard what you ordered or not. So that it made the thing a much more exact science, shall we say. The battlefield, to us, became a much more exact science once we had a reliable wireless set and we could transmit and receive orders with certainty.
Mm. With the 5th Battalion was a mixed battalion as
it
regards
was.
Equipment, yes. With regard to the medium and the light tanks, at the time, which did young officers like you feel were most relevant to the needs of the Corps?
I would say probably the medium tank, which later became the heavy tank, so to speak, was really regarded as the basis of the tank corps, and the light tanks were reconnaissance vehicles. And I think we realized then that, for example, the cavalry with armored cars, and there were two from fairly early days, there were the 11th Hussars and the 12th Lancers were mechanized with armored cars, and they used to do reconnaissance in their divisions. They didn't work with us. In fact, until I got to Egypt, I'd never seen them. But I think we realized that reconnaissance was not something inherent in the tactics or strategy of the tank corps, whereas we thought a medium or heavy tank was.
What do you remember about the 1935 maneuvers on Salisbury Plain? Do you remember how you were organized, what kind of training program you had, any events that occurred during the course of it?
I don't think there were any outstanding events that I can remember, but again, we were then organized in a light company in the battalion and a light section and a medium section in each of the other three companies. Let's say we had four company battalions. Now, subsequent to that, the first light battalion was formed, which took the light companies from each of the existing battalions, so it didn't increase the overall establishment of the tank corps, but it meant that as battalions we became three company battalions instead of four. We lost our light company, so that this altered the concept to some extent, in that thereafter, instead of each battalion having its own light company to do its reconnaissance, the brigade relied on the light battalion to do the overall reconnaissance. Mm. Whereas the light tanks within the companies in the mixed battalions only did the company reconnaissance, mm. not the battalion.
Do you remember what the emphasis of the training was during the brigade exercises?
Yes, very much tank v tank battles. A certain amount of stress, but not so much on the breakthrough and attacking soft targets once you've got through, and rapid movement. There was a certain amount of that, but there was also a certain amount of tank v tank battles where although it was brigade training, one battalion would be detached as the enemy, and then you'd have a tank v tank battle. Mm. That is to say, you'd have to make use of the contours of the land. One battalion would be hull down behind the top of a hill, so only their gun and turret was peeking over the top, which didn't give the attacking battalions much of a target to go on, and then you had to go round the flanks and carry out all the sort of manoeuvres which one might expect under those circumstances. We did quite a lot of training in that sort of thing.
Did you feel personally that as a result of this brigade training, you learned anything about the capabilities of your equipment and the capabilities of the arm? Was it personally educative?
I think so, yes. It was fairly primitive, really. It was fairly primitive as regards tactics. But I think one learnt the capabilities of one's equipment and what was likely to happen when you were caught in various circumstances, either you were in the ascendant because you caught the enemy by surprise, or alternatively, you yourself were caught in an unfortunate position. I mean, you might be down the bottom of a valley and the enemy were at the top of the hill. Well, for one thing, with the speed limitations, he could move much faster down the slope than you could ever move up, which gave him a great advantage, both as regards manoeuvre and also as regards gunnery in that it was much easier, although of course this was only simulated, but you can imagine that it would be it's much easier to hit a slow moving target than it is a fast moving target.
Now about the middle of 1935, still with 5th Battalion, you got a new job as technical officer. How did you come to get this appointment?
Well, because I probably was more interested in the technical side of vehicles than most officers, and possibly owing to my training having been at the Royal Military Academy as opposed to Sandhurst, I was probably better at workshops concerns than most officers, and our commanding officer by then was Lieutenant Colonel Clifton. He knew me well because he was a very good horseman, and so was I, and we used to train our horses together. So that he knew me very well. He presumably considered me capable of doing the work as his technical adjutant, which is virtually what a technical officer was, and therefore he made me his technical officer, although I was considerably more junior than would normally have been the case.
Did this particular kind of appointment fit in with your personal career ambitions?
Well, it was very interesting. Yes, it gave me a variant from being a section officer. I'd already been a section officer, and after all, although I may have been technical officer of the battalion, I still went out on training, although my job then was to recover and repair faulty vehicles. The bottom is can and condensed and gradually filled up the can, and then you could We're talking about brigade training.
Brigadier Bright, Reel 4.
We're talking about brigade training.